Hi, everybody. Joseph Amato back with you with What's Next, the West Wing podcast, episode 2, Post-Hoc Ergo Propter Hoc. Anthony Caputo, how are you, sir?
Good. How you doing, Joe?
Very good. So, Post-Hoc Ergo Propter Hoc, did you enjoy this one?
I did. I did. It was...
What is it? You guys are, I did. It's like, I don't believe you.
Well, you know, it's... I got to give you something. Excitement.
All right, whatever. That's I don't know why.
I don't know because I feel like I owe it to you.
Why? So why?
All right. I'm excited to be here.
I'm excited to be here with you. That's what's wrong with us. Okay, so, episode 2 is a really good episode. I think let's just knock out. I think really quickly. So, the show originally wasn't supposed to have the president on. You know, right. It was supposed to be about the staffers. So I think this episode is really now delving into the president himself, giving you the first taste of it. You get that? You
see yeah.
that?
Yeah, I started seeing his leadership.
Yeah, not only that, but I mean, you're even getting to just know him in general. I mean, the whole thing with how he is with the Joint Chiefs, his relationship with the vice president, how he looks at violence, all those things. You're starting to get a better sense of it. And I think that maybe even if you didn't know... that the show originally wasn't supposed to have the president on it. You can kind of almost make that assumption because he's like not in the pilot at all. And then the second episode is basically all about him.
Right.
So do you have any feeling now that you're getting to know the president a little bit more? Do you have any feelings about him? I mean, you saw him for 1.5 scenes in the pilot. Mm. Anything from this episode that you're like, whoa, you can't really tell what I'm doing with my face, ladies and gentlemen, but because those O's didn't sound different, but the faces were different. So yeah, any of those faces happened
I didn't get any of those faces.
Okay, good. But... to be honest, I'd be worried if you did.
But the president, I don't know, he seems to be acting like a president would, like in my eyes.
What does that mean?
He meets my expectation of what a president would act like in the White House.
Right, what does that mean, though?
Like he's authoritative, he's directive, right. He's confident,
right?
He's I don't know, all those things.
Yeah, I mean, I'd agree with that. I mean, if I had a president, I would want him to be just like Jed Bartlett, I think.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
All right. Well, I'm glad that I'm glad that you like him. I mean, he's certainly, you know,
he's affable.
He is affable. He's certainly one of those presidents that's often loved. In television lore and what have you. I think he just did a new commercial in which he plays his character loosely, car commercial. But
you ever find that funny?
What?
How like when you get so successful in one show, it's hard to play other roles.
I do find it funny. I mean, I totally find it understandable because people just see you as that one thing, or you're only capable of doing that one thing. Like what's his name? Michael Cera. Do you remember Michael Cera?
Oh, Michael Cera.
He can only do that. Maybe he can do more things, but I feel like every time, everything he's in is that, yeah, no, I do love you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah, that's, he's never going to be Iago in Hamlet.
Iago.
Well, I'm just saying, like, I don't know.
Pull that one out.
He's never like, can you imagine him in Star Wars? Like, everybody's running around, like, doing shit, and he's like, Ray, no, I'll be with you in a second.
He'd make a good 3PO.
I love you. He would actually be a good droid. No, I would hate that droid so much, I gotta tell you.
Me too. Yeah. Well, actually, so the first thing that comes to mind is Seinfeld when I think of this.
Who?
We're pivoting here again to what I said about like when you.
Well,
when
I'm just stretching my legs.
When you're pigeonholed into a role.
Yeah, but right. Who you're talking about?
All of them. Like, George Costanza is always going to be George Costanza to me.
Jason L.
Kramer's always going to be Kramer.
Julie Louis-Dreyfus has had a very good career post.
She is, but she's still Elaine. Every time I see her, I'm like, oh, well.
Well,
yeah,
Jerry is definitely Jerry.
Right.
Kramer, I just don't know that he's that talented. So I don't know that he's really that good or what have you. But, no, I think Jason Alexander's done some other stuff. But I get what you're saying.
Yeah, but in my eyes, they're always going to be.
All right, so what did you like about this episode of Seinfeld? Oh, no, we're not doing Seinfeld. So, okay, sorry. Okay, so let's go. I want to start with this episode from the tippity top, and I want to ask you, is Lloyd Russell just a dick?
Lloyd Russell. I still don't know the names.
Lloyd Russell is the guy in the beginning that Mandy works for.
That she almost hit with her car.
Yes.
Because she's a horrible driver.
She was like 30
She is the worst driver I've ever seen.
Okay. But she didn't almost hit him. He was like 30 yards away. You are being ridiculous now.
I think she would have hit him if she had the chance.
Oh, God. Is he a dick? Something here doesn't track to me, okay? Because if she is such a wily, excellent political operative, she would not align herself with someone who is scamming her. And it seems like he's either scamming her or he's a moron.
But,
and she would not align herself with either person.
Right, but wasn't it said that they're dating?
Yes.
Yeah, so I think that played a lot into that decision.
I think they start... See, but... I don't think so.
It's the only logical conclusion, because like you said, if she is as politically savvy as she is, why would she align herself strategically with this guy?
Yes. You know what?
It's probably for loves.
Maybe that's the only...
Loves. Love is in the air.
Love's in... That's going to cost us money. You can't do that.
Love is not in the air.
You're still singing the same... All right. You know what? I'm going to give you that, because... Look, everybody knows, or not everybody knows, but I mean, you know that I love Sorkin, you know I love his writing. There's some stuff in this episode that I think is fantastic. I'm going to get to it. This to me seems like a little bit of lazy writing. This seems like an easy way to get her out of a job so that then she can be added to the staff, which I think is a great, clever way. Josh creates his own hell. He got her out, and then he's the first one that insists on a new media director, and... You know, chickens coming home to roost, that's great. I think it's a little bit of lazy writing on Sorkin's part. I don't buy someone as supposedly savvy as Mandy being with this guy. And maybe he's just a dick. Maybe he used her, wanted to scare the Bartlett White House in order to get a, you know, spot at the nominating convention. I don't know. Just doesn't kind of add up for me. But all right. Just wanted, you're saying it's love. I'm going to say it's lazy writing. So, you know, never the twain shall meet. They never coexist. Lazy writing and love. All right, so that's that. The next thing that I think that we have to talk about is, well, I mean, you can jump to wherever you want. But the one thing that struck me about this episode that I thought was really interesting, I always thought that like the vice president and the president were simpatico.
Yeah, you know what? Me too. Like, I always thought they were, like, best friends.
Yeah, like, I always thought they were, like, chums.
But they're not.
No, they're not. And it, more so, they seem to be, like, I guess when you get into, you know, first of all, can you imagine Joe Biden speaking French like the way Hoynes did?
That was pretty impressive.
I can't imagine. Joe Biden would just be dropping F-bombs all over the place. Like, I don't know this fucking language, Pierre. Like, and that would be like a problem. That'd be amazing. No, but it seems like there's a deep-rooted history. Again, there's a lot of things that are going on here that are, you know, windows into the president. But yeah, I just assumed that the president and the VP were...
I wonder if they are, though, or if this show is just depicting it as that. You know, for drama's sake.
You know what? And all individual things, like, you know, I'm sure that Quayle and Bush the First, as well as Cheney and Bush the Second, as well as Gore and Clinton, and now Biden and Obama, I'm sure they're all different. You know what I mean?
Right.
As we'll get into the show, I mean, I think you're going to see a lot of different facets of their relationship. But yeah, I just always assumed that it was going to be. I thought it was really interesting how the relationship was handled with the vice president. What did you take away from that scene when Leo calls the vice president in?
That was an intense scene.
It was, but I mean, yeah. Like, it's interesting because look at it this way: say I'm your superior, which is true anyway.
Well, let's not carry away.
Right. So let's say I'm your superior, which is true. So
let's not get carried away.
Right. So let's say I'm your superior, which is true.
Let's live in ignorance is bliss.
Oh, you do that, buddy. You definitely do that. So let's say I'm your superior.
Okay. Sure, Joe.
Very good. So.
Isn't it great to be blissful?
No, hold on. Now, here's the thing. What if you called me to your office to, like, tell me what I'm doing wrong? That would be, as opposed to you coming to me in my own domain. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because Leo, and I get that Leo is the chief of staff, but no one elected Leo. The vice president and the president are the people that you elect. I don't want the chief of staff telling the vice president what to do, me personally. So in my opinion, the vice president is above Leo. Leo calls the vice president over.
But is he? But is, like, I mean, what? Legitimately, like, hierarchical.
Yes, if the president dies, the vice president takes over. Like, that. I don't, but even if that weren't the case, although I don't know what the case would be, you don't elect the chief of staff. The chief of staff is not, true. He's not.
He's appointed, right?
Who's the chief of staff right now in the White House?
I couldn't tell you.
Exactly my point. You know what I'm saying? Like, it doesn't, that's not how it works. That's not, so what I'm saying is, when you have that dynamic, and this is, now I'm going to say why Sorkin's a good writer, the tension from the outset, at least from the given circumstances, for the vice president has to be there. He knows, feign all he wants, he knows why he's there to talk about AC3 or whatever, AC3, I don't know what the hell
DC.
It was. Yeah, DCC3PC. So then when he drops the hammer on him, and with the whole CJ thing, which, by the way, you know, CJ was a good girl. Nice little sexism there, Sorks. Sorks. You like that? I'm just stretching my leg. By the way, that's going to be my new euphemism for things. Like, when I have to tell somebody something really bad, I'm just going to say, yeah, no, I'm just stretching my legs. So if you hear me say that, something's coming. But yeah, I thought it was really interesting. I thought it was a really smart way to write the scene, set the scene, because you really get the sense that there's clearly very little respect that Leo has for the vice president. Mm. You get that? Do you see that?
Totally. And I don't think I really know how the vice president feels about Leo so as much as he doesn't feel like he's being treated right by that administration.
Yeah, that's a good point, because I do think you see that he respects Leo, because when Leo says, I'll win and you'll be playing celebrity golf, he knows he's right.
Right.
But to your point as well, there's something going on where he clearly doesn't respect the president, because he's like, you and your pal. And then there's something else, because it's almost a little, I don't even want to say personal or hurtful, but there's something there where he says something to the effect of, you know, I got, like, shoved in a closet right after, you know.
Right.
So there's something going on there. So I'm sure something's going to bear itself out as the episodes go on.
Right.
But it's a good observation by you.
I know that Leo doesn't respect him. You'd
go to the guy's office if you respected
him.
You know, you don't summon someone that's more powerful than you. Like, you would never summon me to your office.
Well,
like, you would never do that.
Yeah, well, this is the thing.
Because you're not capable of that.
Well, I do have an office, and
right, but you would never summon me to that. I would
request your presence.
Right, but that you wouldn't even do that, because that would be a sign of disrespect. You would always come to me no matter where I was.
Really?
Yeah, that's the way that goes. Right. So, moving on, because we've settled that issue, clearly. I wanted to touch briefly on, and from now and again, guys, there are structural things, the artistry of the writing, sometimes the directing or the acting, that really make me happy from my nerd point of view. And I want to know if Anthony, if you see it, if you appreciate it, if this is going to come up every now and again, and, you know, you'll hear it happen. But I really loved how the whole thing with the joke that was made about the Ryder Cup team seemed to be a big problem in the beginning. Would you not agree?
No, I agree.
Everybody's talking about it. It's a whole thing. They do the postdoc ergo propter hoc, which we'll get into. It's a great trick of writing that in the subsequent scenes, they do. Have you heard of a walk and talk?
No, but I could probably guess what that
you
is.
You probably can. It's when people walk and talk simultaneously.
Wow.
Yes, I know.
People can do that?
Well, they can. But Aaron Sorkin is really known for it because he uses it a lot. You see it in this episode. You see it throughout. It happens all the time. But what's really great is how the structure of like four or five things go in the, I think in the first act, and the joke of the, what?
The first act?
Yeah, first commercial break. Before the first commercial break.
Is that what it's really called?
Yes, that's what it's
really called.
Yeah.
It's like a play?
Yeah, well, not like a play, but you have to call it something.
Oh, well.
That's why they call it cold open is before the teaser, cold open is either the teaser or cold open, and that's right before the credits. So what was that in this episode?
I remember Santa Laurie.
Oh, no. The cold open / teaser was Mandy driving the car. And then we went into the credits. Then Act 1 begins.
Oh, I gotcha.
So, yeah, there's names.
That's
pretty
cool. Is it Act 2 and 3 and 4, too?
Yeah, but it depends. You know, TV changes all the time. So, like, a show that would be on, say, like HBO that doesn't have commercials,
right,
it might be broken down differently. A half hour typically doesn't have four acts. It just depends. But in this circumstance, the thing that's the source of the most consternation in the first act ends up being the thing that saves the day by the end. And and everything in between is so well done. So you get all the, you know, Flippy and the, you know, the Ryder Cup guys. And then you have Josh speak with Toby in a little bit of a walk and talk about how they have to find a new media consultant because, you know, this, I don't know, you know, there was the G8, the New Jersey thing, this has to stop, you know, you and I have to talk to him, and we should also bring CJ and Sam. So we have to gang up on him. That's right. And we have to make sure it's a thing. Great. Right into Toby talking to CJ, and they start strategizing about the briefing and talking about the Ryder Cup again.
Mm.
And they're talking about a few things, and then Toby says, listen, something happens in the meeting that you don't like, use the Ryder Cup thing as coverage. You do best with the pie in your face. I'm like, all right, good. We're on board. And it happens so quickly. I don't think you pick it up the first time you watch it. And then what happens, they get into the press briefing room and the question about Hoynes, and it's something that's more serious. And what happens? They use the Ryder Cup thing to cover it. I love that whole arc of that first act. I think that's just such a one. Again, you know, he doesn't waste a lot of time. He used a lot of the same things. Were you conscious of all that as it was going? Or you're just like, you're seeing it now that I'm saying it?
I saw them walking and talking.
Oh, good job.
Yeah, thanks.
Well, you only really needed your eyes for that.
Yeah.
Well, ears too, I suppose.
And the brain.
Yeah, all right.
But yeah, so I love when you break things down like that, because when I watch something, I'm not looking for these things.
Right.
And you like really nicely like say, oh, well, this is what you just watched.
Right.
And it's a whole different perspective on what I just watched.
Do you appreciate it?
I appreciate it, absolutely.
Okay.
But I don't think that I'm in a place where I can easily recognize it.
Sure. Well, I'm going to always ask you if you appreciate these things, because I think they're all kind of different. And again, to me, I just love them. This is what elevates a show from just being good to being great, and from being great to being legendary.
That's interesting, because this is what you're picking up on as what makes a show good to great.
Yeah.
That's not what I would point as bringing a show from good to great.
What would it be?
I don't know what it would be. But I don't think it would be that. Wouldn't be my deciding factor.
I think another reason why I think that's the case is because it always gives you the opportunity to learn more upon different viewings, I think. But I don't know. I mean, I'd be interested to see what you think makes a show legendary.
I think for me it would be the type of dialogue, how relatable it is to my life. What am I learning from this?
See, but here's the thing, right? I totally agree with you. But that could just be a great show. When you add the artistry, it takes that greatness and makes it legendary. So, for example, I think Scrubs is a great show. I think that it's relatable. I think it's hysterical. But I don't think they really break any new ground a whole heck of a lot. I think in certain instances they did. I think they're very creative. Like they did that there was a musical episode. I thought that was pretty good. But structurally speaking, it's a half hour. There's not that much you can do. They tried to push the boundaries as much as they could. But if they were able to do it on a consistent basis, the way Sorkin was able to do it on The West Wing or well, I'm just going to give him The West Wing because I don't really like his other shows except for Sports Night, but that wasn't on long enough. I think it would have made it almost legendary and one of the greatest comedies of all time. But that to me, I agree with you. I'm saying there's like a little added something extra that gives it a pop, a little oomph.
Yeah, I guess I'd have to agree with that.
But if you're not looking for it, then it doesn't matter to you.
Yeah, I guess it is subjective, right?
It absolutely
is. What makes a good show legendary?
Yeah, and if somebody likes and thinks that Gunsmoke is like the greatest show of all time, who are you to tell them? Now we're talking about opinion.
Right.
You know what
I
mean?
Right, right, right.
And I'm a firm believer in there is no such thing as right and wrong in terms of art, which is why I think something like the Oscars or giving awards is like complete bullshit. And I also think it's complete bullshit. Like, some people like Breaking Bad. Some people like The Wire. Some people like The West Wing. You know, there are other shows. If someone's like favorite show of all time is, you know, Angel or Buffy the Vampire Slayer, then that's their favorite show.
Buffy was great.
But I'm saying, like, you know what I mean? Like, from an artistic point of view, you're not going to find many people that are going to say it's better than The Wire. But fuck those people. Like, you know, I look at it this way, and this is how I relate everything. And I'm interested to know if you do the same. I hate opera. I hate jazz. I hate ballet. These are all forms of art that I think are fantastic, and I wish I loved them, but I just don't. And so, am I any less a person because I don't like jazz, because I don't like ballet, because I don't like opera? I don't know, maybe I am. I don't think I am. But because that's the case, that doesn't mean then that I'm going to turn around and say, what? You like X shitty TV show as the best and don't like The Wire?
So I agree.
It's bullshit.
So what I would say to you is you're not in a place to have an opinion on it.
An opinion on what?
On ballet, opera,
I
jazz.
Completely agree.
So, you know, if we're having a conversation about it, you know, it wouldn't be in good spirits to say jazz sucks.
No, I'm saying, right, no, I don't mean jazz sucks quite the opposite. What I'm saying is I don't think jazz sucks. I think that jazz, maybe I'm not explaining myself well. I don't like it. I hate it.
Right.
I appreciate it and wish I liked it because I know how good and complex it is in terms of a, you know, intellectually I get it. But I just can't enjoy it. Like I can't make myself enjoy it. And I guess what I'm saying is I further that along by then saying if someone comes along and tells me that their favorite TV show is a cartoon from the 1970s, like, I don't know, fine. Like, if that's what you like, then that's what you like. You understand
right.
what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah. But, yeah, all right. I guess then how do you have such a strong opinion on something if you don't...
Well, you can like what you like, but my liking something and your disliking it are incongruous. And that's the thing that we do. So my favorite movie of all time, it changes every now and again, but right now and for a while it's been Inside Llewyn Davis. If somebody watched that movie, in fact, I had someone that I really respected, admired, all this other stuff. They watched it and they didn't like it. Now, a lot of times people make that personal. I think there's like a translation in the head which says, it's something that I like, therefore it reflects upon me. They don't consciously think this,
right,
it reflects upon me. And because you don't like it, you're saying that there's something bad about me because I like it.
Or you're not going to like me because you don't like...
Right. There's something... Yeah. There's a connection that's made right. about the person as opposed to my yes. tastes, right? And what I realized when this person didn't like this movie was, you know, and me and my buddy Justin, we love art and film and we talk about taste all the time because it comes down... Because this is what we're really talking about is taste. Someone else's... my enjoyment is not dependent on someone else's enjoyment. If I look at a sunset and I think it's gorgeous, it doesn't matter if the guy next to me thinks it looks like shit.
It doesn't matter, right? But I think where a lot of people come from is they want to have that connection. They want to be understood.
Absolutely.
You know, and I feel like if you like something and somebody else doesn't like it, it's just as, it's the same as saying, wait, but you, I thought you understood me. You don't understand me.
Right.
And that's what people attribute it to.
That's right. I just think that's an incorrect assumption that's being made.
Maybe.
I think, again, I'm boiling it down as simple as possible. My enjoyment on something is not dependent on someone else's enjoyment of it.
Yeah, and it shouldn't be.
That's right. That's what I'm saying.
Right.
And I think it gets all muddied up with, it means something personal about me and this connection and this and that.
Right.
You can connect on other things, but if your favorite piece of music, film, an experience you love. Now, if your enjoyment is based on a mutual experience, that's a whole other thing. If you and, say, a lovely lady friend or a good buddy of yours or something experience a concert or a life-altering event or whatever, and then you find out, and your attachment to it is based on your experience with that person, to then find out that they did not share that experience, I think that would alter something. But if you go independently and watch a film and you're like, this is the greatest movie I've ever seen, and then some schmuck in a newspaper is like, this is the worst piece of shit ever, just because that guy says it's terrible doesn't mean it actually is, nor does it mean that your experience of it is any less valid.
Yeah, true.
Circle gets the square. Boom. I don't know what that means. Well, Circle gets the square. I know what that means. That's from Hollywood Squares, but...
Yeah, I mean, we could talk about this for a while, but I don't...
Well, we don't have time because we've got to move on to postdoc and right, proc doc. But no, but finish.
I mean, I think it's different, too, in the case of a friendship versus... I think the type of relationship that you attribute it to matters. Like, is it a friendship? Is it a romantic relationship? Is it a familial relationship?
Oh, yeah, totally.
Right? Because if I'm dating somebody and we constantly don't find that we like the same things...
It's right, but now you're talking about, the fact that maybe you two shouldn't be together, as opposed to, now you're talking about something else though. I'm talking about ways in which you attach yourself to enjoyment / meaning.
Right, and my what I'm saying is, wouldn't you want to attach yourself to somebody else who shares the same attachment of enjoyment, excitement.
And yeah, meaning. And I think in a lot of ways, absolutely. I think ideally I would love, to be with someone that enjoyed watching,
right,
the Mets, that would enjoy...
The West Wing.
The West Wing, that would enjoy certain movies. But this girl that I'm talking about, this girl that moved...
Oh, she's a girl.
Yeah. There's this girl...
You refer to her as they...
Well, there's this one girl who is, I don't want to use names. She's Canadian. All
right.
So now she knows who she is. She's living not in Canada, though, and not in the United States. So now she really knows who she is.
Let's give her a name.
Debbie.
Debbie.
That's a terrible name for her because it's so anti what she is. I think like Debbie's not attractive at all, and she is gorgeous. Anyway.
All right, Debbie.
She did not... I love her in a way that I will not love anyone else. And I'm not talking about like bullshit movie love. I mean, there's a genuine,
right,
there's a genuineness there.
Okay.
She hates Inside Llewyn Davis.
Hmm.
It does not change how I feel about her one bit, nor does it not change how I feel about the movie. But people do get sensitive with shit like that.
Yeah.
And that bothers me.
Yeah.
If it happened on every single thing that I love,
right,
that's a whole other story. I'm talking about singularly.
Oh, okay. All right. Then, yeah, then I'm on board.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. So, okay. As we said, we teased a little postdoc ergo whatnot. So now it's time to do a little postdoc ergo whatnot.
Propter hocking.
Yeah, we're going to propter hock right now. Oh, and then we got to go into the whole I'm just stretching my legs bit.
That was great.
All right, so you understood postdoc ergo prop doc, right? A precedes B, therefore A causes B, except that never happens.
Except they didn't explain it like this in the show, so...
Right. Well, A precedes B, therefore A caused B, but it didn't happen that way. They used the example of the Texas thing. You know, he made a joke about funny hats, and then he got destroyed afterwards in an election in Texas. Therefore, the joke about the funny hats
was attributed to
his failure. Reason why he lost. And
so
then
it's like
says,
a correlation does not equal causation.
Yes, but isn't correlation causation not necessarily time dependent?
Not necessarily.
Okay. Well, this is certainly time dependent. So yes, if correlation causation, I think some correlation causations can attribute it to this, but not mm-hmm. all.
Okay.
But they use that example with the hats because then President Bartlett says the reason why they lost Texas isn't because of the funny hat joke. It's because he learned Latin and he's a smart guy and Texas people don't like smart men. That's what the show is saying. It's what the show is saying. I'm not saying that. The show is saying that. But we're jumping all the way to the end here, but I don't mind doing it. Kind of the theme of the episode here is a little bit of that. Well, not the theme of the episode, but the title of the episode is Post-Hoc Ergo Propter Hoc. And we talk about violence a lot in this episode, okay? So we're going to jump to that middle section with Morris Tolliver, then we're going to jump to the end. Cool?
Morris Tolliver is the...
Doctor.
Doctor.
Yes. Okay. So, so we know what post-hoc ergo propter hoc is. That's on the back burner. Let's now go to the second part of this. There's three parts. The second part's Morris Tolliver and the whole conversation with violence.
With the Joint Chiefs.
Yeah, I'm not comfortable with violence. I don't feel violent towards my enemies, and I don't know if it's a weakness or not. Can you answer any of those questions for me?
Yes. Let's go down the list.
Okay. Are you comfortable with violence?
No.
Okay. Do you feel violent towards your enemies?
No.
Is that a weakness?
No.
Okay. The first two are just emotional responses, so that's fine. Why do you feel like that's not a weakness?
Because I feel like people should be judged based on their strengths and weaknesses. And if your strength isn't violence, if your strength isn't this type of hardcore execution focused individual, then you shouldn't be judged based on, you know, your ability to not execute or execute.
I don't know that that's fair given the fact that he's the commander in chief and the president.
Yeah, but still... I think that
that's like saying, you know, a pacifist wouldn't make a good hangman and then being like, well, I can't blame the pacifist. And it's like, I'm not asking you to give me a, you know, is the pacifist a good person or not or whatever. It's, is the pacifist a good hangman?
Or
pacifist is a terrible hangman.
Right. So then why is he in that position?
Right. So
shouldn't be judged
But that was an extreme example.
Right.
So... is it a weakness for a president not to feel violent?
No, I don't think so. Because he surrounds himself, he builds his constituency to cover his weaknesses, right? You know what you're good at, and you need to elect people who fill gaps in your own
person.
Well,
he appoints them, but yeah, I get what you're saying.
You know?
I don't...
It's like saying, and I think it's an Einstein quote, it's like saying, If you had judged a fish on its ability to climb a tree, you'd have it living its whole life thinking that it was stupid.
Right. Again, I don't think that that's analogous here, though. I think that's the same thing as like the pacifist and the hangman. I think that's too much of an extreme. It's not like we're saying the president has to commit violent actions. The fish would eventually have to get up the tree. It's just whether or not...
And it did, because that's what we evolved from, but it's a whole different story.
All right. No, but it is true, because the stars said so. No, listen.
The lobe fish.
Great. The point is that... I don't know. I think there are a lot of times that I'm going to have some genuine opinions. This is not one of them. I really don't know if it's a weakness.
I really don't think it's a weakness.
I am not comfortable with violence whatsoever. I am not, even when I see it happening, like sometimes you see like a video of like a guy on the internet or whatever getting like beaten up as being like, but that guy's like, you know, that guy just did something bad or whatever.
Right.
It still turns my stomach.
Even if it's retribution or whatever. Yeah. I can't watch violence. I don't like, I wouldn't say I'm a violent person.
I know you wouldn't. You beat people up at work, but that's a whole other thing.
Let's see. I don't think I beat people up at work.
Yes, you do.
I like to instruct self-defense.
Yeah, but you don't do it gingerly. You do it, you know, in a way that is not nice at all. You're really? Like, wait. He goes like this. He goes, here, grab my hand here. And, like, you just, you know, innocently, like, oh, okay, Anthony. And then you grab his hand, and then he, like, contorts you and has, like, your bones, like, about to snap. And he's like, see, this is what you can do. I'm like, Anthony, let go, Anthony. Anthony, let go, please. Like, it's not enjoyable. Like, do you understand that, like, no one likes that?
Oh, I thought that everyone enjoyed it.
I know you do. You are a violent son of a bitch.
No, I'm not. I'm not. I'm loving. I'm loving. And because I'm loving, I want to make sure that you guys can take care of yourselves out there in this cruel, hard world.
What the hell are you talking about?
Well, I want to show you self-defense.
I live next to, like, the most boring people on the planet. This town is so boring. All right, whatever. All right, so you're not comfortable with violence except when you're, you know, being violent towards others at work. neither am I. I'm very uncomfortable with violence. I don't feel violent towards my enemies. But now here's going to be the bridge to the end of the episode, or the third part of this discussion. The idea of the abstract, okay? There are people in this world that would want to kill Americans or kill you or whatever, whether they're,
just
you know...
Just because we are Americans.
Well, yeah, or, I mean, anything. There are people that would just want to kill you, whether or not they're, like, a sociopath or you know, something as illogical as that, or something as just as illogical as extreme fundamentalism. But obviously two different things. So can we agree that there are people in this world that would kill us if they had the chance?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. Do you feel violent towards them?
No.
And I think the flaw in that, because I feel the exact same way, is that it's an abstract. And I think without saying it, see, this is what good art does. This is what Sorkin does. This is good art. He doesn't say it. He has you suss it out. I think we're talking about abstract, the idea of abstract violence. Absolutely, there are people that want to kill you, me, this world, whatever. There might be people that you know in your past that want to kill you. You've lived a long life. You've seen a lot of things. I don't know what you've done. The bottom line is, I don't feel violent towards them. And I think the reason why is because we are not designed that way as human beings.
Or do you think that you've come to reconcile all of those past lives that you've lived and you're happy with who you've become?
No, I think it's because, I know, not at all. I think it's absolutely because we do not respond to existential threats. We respond to real ones. And so this idea that there is someone out there, I don't feel violent towards. Mm. And so Bartlett can sit there and say, I know this country has enemies and I know that there are people that would like to attack us, but they're nameless and they're faceless and I don't have a violent feeling towards them. Is that track?
Yeah.
You think it's the other way? You've put things into perspective or whatever?
Yeah, that's how I see it. Like, if I had someone from my past that, you know, we did not get along and they've come to try to find me and
were you Liam Neeson?
And inflict damages to my...
Are you post hoc or propter hoc? I will find you and I will kill you. That was my Liam Neeson. Is that it again?
It's all right.
I was about to try and do it again, but I lost it. I never even had it. All right.
And if those people were to come back, I'd be like, but I'd be more inclined and interested to sit them down over a cup of tea and discuss it. Like, why do you feel this way?
Why are you such an asshole sometimes? Like, what does that even mean?
Because, like, I'd be interested in knowing why do you feel this way? Why do you have so much hatred and anger in you? Like, I've gotten over
right,
that.
And you're going to be saying that while the guy is stabbing you in the ribs.
All right, but...
What are you doing? This guy wants to kill you.
No, but I mean, it would have to be controlled.
But you've now changed the setup. I'm talking about the abstract versus the real. If the person is in the room with you, your feelings might change because of things that they say or do. I'm talking about the fact that there are people in this world. This isn't theoretical. There are people in this world that want to kill Americans or just a person, and it could easily be you. Do you feel violent toward them?
No, and I think the way to make it real and bring it home is to say, all right, what if this happens in real life? I guess
right.
Another question,
and
like
that, and that it actually brings us to the end of the episode.
Right. Yeah, but before we go there, question for you.
Shoot, buddy.
Do you hold grudges?
I do.
I
don't do that purposefully. It's a failing in me, and I'm trying to address it, and I'm getting better at it, but I do.
I think there might be a connection there. between feeling violence and holding grudges.
Right, but I don't feel violence.
I know, but you hold grudges.
Yeah.
So that's an interesting dynamic at play.
Well, I think probably the difference is that violence would be the end, is like on the furthest end of retribution for that grudge being
felt. If it was on a spectrum.
There's more passive aggressive ways of getting back. Like if someone slights me and I hold a grudge, I'm not going to stick a shiv in their back.
Right,
I'm just going
to
be like, no, I'm fine, thanks. Like, I wish you could have seen my face on that. Dude, the faces I'm making today. I got to YouTube this shit.
Yeah, we got to have that.
But I think, I just think that violence is a form of retribution for whether or not you hold or grudge or feel slighted or whatever it is. But you're talking about making it real and changing the nature of the game and all that stuff by putting it in front of you. That's what happens by the end of the episode. Morris Tolliver is killed. And now all of a sudden this president becomes fucking Rambo. Now the question that I have for you is,
how scary was that?
Seriously.
I was scared.
So we can agree, right? The trajectory of the episode, the arc is such that you have this guy question his ability to be whatever. Violent, you know, all this other stuff. You clearly see that he's more of a pacifist than he is a violent man, or bloodthirsty, whatever you want to call it. And then the thing happens with Morris Tolliver, and he's ready to go to war. Correct?
That's right. True. That's, like he was ready nothing. To blow him off the face of the planet.
Yes, with God's thunder?
God's fury. Yes. God's great fury.
His furious thunder. My question to you is Sorkin being cute, or is Sorkin telling us Bartlett's true motives? And here's the difference. Title of the episode's Postdoc Ergo Propter Doc. We were told in the very beginning, A precedes B, therefore A causes B. So the question is Morris Tolliver's death and that attack what causes Bartlett to be violent? Or, as Postdoc Ergo Propter Doc would have us have learned, that the thing that precedes the other thing didn't cause it. So it's not the attack. There's something else going on inside Bartlett that has made him so violent in this instance.
Oh my goodness. That's I'm on that side of the fence.
You're on the Postdoc Ergo Propter.
Oh, absolutely.
See, I am completely on the other side of the fence.
Interesting.
Why? I think it's Tolliver. I think this whole idea has been about abstractions. Violence is an abstract.
Right.
We are not. I don't think human beings are violent in that way. The only way that you get to a place is by Morris Tolliver getting killed. And you have a visceral response. And I think you're seeing Bartlett's visceral response. I don't think it's the Joint Chief stuff. I don't think it's feeling like a child at a table that is causing him to overreact. I think Sorkin is saying, me personally, I think it's a circumstance in which you see... you're being told there are a lot of times where the A causes B thing is not the case. This is a time where it is the case. All that talk for an entire episode. Sometimes you just get punched in the face and you want to punch back. To me, that's what's happening at the end.
Hmm.
I want to hear why you think something else is going on.
I think that it was something that came from within himself. This had to come from maybe his childhood, or I don't know. There had to be something, some type of personality trait that caused him to have such a response like that.
You don't think it's as simple as this guy who? What a touching scene they had together! How phenomenal a scene! You know, it ends with him saying, "Look at the picture again. The past isn't the only thing is to be proud of." Meaning. There's a future for you. And this guy dies like 2 days later. He can't talk to any other person in the military. He can talk to this guy. They're joking around. They're having a great... Like, it's emotional. It's an emotional thing. He has this great connection. It's almost fatherly. And he dies.
Right.
He's killed. Not dies. He's killed.
Right.
You don't think that that is what spurs... Again, you might be right. It might be Sorkin telling us, no. Look deeper. I think that's it.
I don't, and it might be selective too. Like this side of Bartlett that we're seeing might only, like, I don't know, I'm curious to see what else happens in other episodes, but I think that where this is coming from is from within him, and I think that this response might just be contextual, right? I think that you could have different responses to different contexts that aren't post hoc ergo propter hoc.
Right.
But I think that this one is post hoc ergo propter hoc. That's what I think.
I just need, I guess what I'm saying is, I understand, I respect that. I need you to prove it because I don't see it.
All right. Well,
I think it's a nice ironic twist that by the end of this episode, everything that you learned about post-hoc ergo propter hoc goes right out the window. And I think that it's even more appropriate when throughout there is this abstract discussion of violence. And I think in a way there's a message, which is to say that violence only ever really comes when there is a stimuli, really, when there's something that provokes and prods, that it doesn't come from other places.
I'm sorry. Like, I'm still stuck on this because I'm not like that. Like, I was in a car accident a couple of weeks.
Are you telling me that if someone killed someone you loved and you knew who did it and they did it for no other reason than to do it, you would not feel violent?
Yeah, I would. That's the point. But I guess I would just seek first to understand.
Well, first of all, this is hypothetical, so we don't really know.
Right.
I think that, and you might be the exception, but I really feel like I would be violent first and then try and seek understanding second.
Maybe. I don't know. I put it into reality, too. I was hit in the back of my car on the road the other day. And I'm just minding my own business. I was singing some Bruce Springsteen. I was enjoying myself.
Well, maybe the person got really violent because Springsteen sucks.
Oh, well, we all know that could happen.
That's happened before. Yeah. That's good.
But I think, like, I got out of the car, right? Like, and you would think,
you were in shock. No, I wouldn't think you were violent. In a car accident, you don't know who's wrong.
Yeah, you do. If you sat by a stop sign and someone comes ramming into you from behind.
No, but it's more of a moment of shock. Usually people don't do that intentionally. You are trying to figure out what just happened.
No, I've
been in car accidents before.
I'm an advocate of circumstance reveals a person.
Okay, right? That's fine.
And I think that this circumstance is revealing Bartlett. Just like when I got out of the car, I didn't come running to the guy behind me like, what did you do? Like, oh, weren't you paying attention? No, I was just like, are you all right? Is everything okay? Like, I approached the situation after I got hit differently.
Right.
When I've hit other people, they've gotten out of their car ready to fight me.
Okay, that's fine. I guess what I'm saying is if you had someone, here's another analogy or an example. Someone's in the car with you. Somebody walks up to the car, shoots the guy in the head that's in the car with you.
What are we in, the mafia?
I'm saying, though, because that's more comparable to what happened to Morris Tulliver. Morris Tulliver didn't get into a car accident and the president was like, hey, what happened? Did we run a red? Is everybody good? That's not what happened.
Right, but I'm trying to put this into everyday context because we're never going to really...
But you can't, but that's not analogous. You can't compare the two.
But it is analogous for different levels.
If you try and ask a fish to climb a tree, he's going to think that you're calling him a monkey. Is that what the story was?
Close enough.
All right, I think we're going to have to table this because I don't think we're going to be able to find out until the next episode.
All right.
Right? I mean, yeah. We're not really going to be able to know. I'm on the side of this is not, and it could easily be. I mean, I really could understand how the moral of this, or not the moral of this episode, but the message here in this particular part is that there are deeper things that go on with violence. And I do believe that sometimes that does happen. I just really do think in this circumstance, it's literally Bartlett got punched in the stomach, and that's what it took for him to be violent. Because I think and to your point earlier, I see myself in that a lot. I can't work myself up into violence. But when something happens that makes me feel violent, I realize in that moment I'm more like the president in that particular part.
That's the other thing too. Like, I don't know if the president feels violence.
You don't think so? I think without saying it, I think that's actually the point of the end.
So I feel so violent.
And by the way, how terrified is Leo? That's how violent the president is right there.
Right. I know. I don't feel violent when things happen. Like if you punch me in the face, I'm my first instinct is going to be like I want to kill you. Like I'm a very violent person, but I feel like you can only be judged based on your actions. Right? And I don't think I would ever act on that violence.
Yeah, but we're not talking about acting on violence. I'm talking about feeling violence.
Well, then I feel a lot of violence.
Yeah, well, then there you go. All right, well, we're going to have to wait until the next episode because I don't know that...
All right, well, let's see if he acts on it because I'm interested to see what's going to come of this.
We're going to find out.
And I also think it's interesting that we answer all those questions the same but have a different reasoning behind it.
What do you mean?
Our three answers were no.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And we
I don't know. I don't know if it's a weakness. I still don't know if it's a weakness not to feel violence in that position. I literally don't know. Your point about having people around you to advise you is actually an excellent one, because I feel like that's where you would really get the good kind of, you know, if I was feeling apprehensive, I think maybe, you know, if you have trusted people around you, I think that's actually an excellent point. I really couldn't tell you whether or not it's a weakness. I really don't know.
Hmm. All right.
And I'm not going to pretend to know, buddy.
Good.
What
are you saying? I'm pretending?
Yep. So there was another part that we it sparked as we were talking about it. Oh, Morris Tolliver, because I mentioned the little bit of sexism before, and I'd be remiss if I didn't mention this. It's a small thing. I don't want to dwell on it too long because there's other stuff that we need to get to. But my God, did Leo really need to be like, here's a picture of a baby with the mother. Look at that for a while to Margaret to get her to be distracted. Like, really? Is right. that like I get that like it's right. a funny part or whatever, but does it have to be so like overt and blatant?
Yeah, that was pretty
that was just overt. Awful. All right, we did VP, we did the sexism. Ryder Cup, that thing is so funny to me. I really wanted to get to this because I know that you have to have certain opinions about this. Lori.
Ooh.
And Sam.
Ooh.
So, let's hear it. What do you think, buddy?
Hey, I'm all for it.
No, I know you are. I'm talking about what happened between them, you jerk.
What part?
Well, first there's Sam. Sam, every time Sam needs to tell something serious or whatever, I'm just stretching my legs. That's why I'm just stretching my legs, which is fantastic. I'm totally using that. Right. I really am. But, and just the scenes of him telling, Toby's just great. I'm sorry, did you trip over something? I just love that so much. I guess what I'm saying is, do you... All right, let's do like we did with the Bartlett thing. Let's make it easy. Do you think that Sam wants to reform her?
No.
Ah, I don't either. Why do you think that? Not directly anyway, I don't think.
Well, because he called her four times just to tell her that he had a good day.
Well, yes. We don't know if he called her four times in that particular day, but that's you saying that is that the line about having a good day. You're absolutely right. He treats her like I think he's like a friend, more than a friend.
I think he's intrinsically curious about this woman, and I think that he's intrigued, and I think that he wants to get to know her. I don't think that he's trying to reform her at all.
Do you think he wants to be with her?
Yes.
Yeah,
I do. Yeah. And I think that she wants to be with him. Right. But I think they both know it's not the right thing to do.
Right.
And forbidden love is so tasteful.
I wish everybody could see his face right now. It just lit up like a Christmas tree. He was that when he said forbidden love, it was on.
Yeah.
Forbidden love. He's so flush. It's amazing. Oh God, I got to Snapchat this. I don't even have that on my phone. I don't even know what Snapchat is. All right. So all right. That's great. I love this whole interaction with them because of the combo of the writing and the acting, right? So you have Sam go Rob Lowe does such a phenomenal job. You have him go into that bar and he talks to that girl and he's like, you know, where's Lori? You know, and then she says, you know, who's Lori? Or whatever. And then Sam makes a mistake. He says, well, Lori's not a real name. That's not what you know her by.
Oh.
And then he's like, actually, Lori is her real name. You know her by something else. And the reason why I think that that's really telling is because he's flustered. He's nervous.
Ah.
You get what I'm saying? Like, yeah. he's not speaking.
He's not cool, calm, and collected.
And then when he gets to the thing over there and it's like, you know, I've known this girl this entire time. How do you know Brittany? Who's Brittany?
Yeah.
Like, it's this such a Brittany. Funny. Okay.
Oh, okay.
That's such a funny effing moment. It's so good. But again, it's indicative yet again of how uneasy he is. And it's just so phenomenal. And then, of course, they get outside, right?
Right.
And there's the whole thing with, if I cost you some money, I'll write you a check. And she's like, you know, like, fuck you for saying that. Like, that's messed up. And then this phenomenal acting. It really is great acting. Maybe it was directing. Maybe the director told him to do it, but Rob Lowe pulled it off. He's about to say something, stops, thinks, almost gives like a, okay, that's my bad, kind of like a little facial expression, and then says, I apologize. That was inappropriate. Because clearly he didn't mean to say what he said or how it came out, or maybe there was a little bit of a twinge of something that was emotional there and realized. But it just, again, furthers the idea that he's not in control of himself right now.
Right.
He really... And this does not play to me as someone who's trying to save someone else.
Right.
This plays to me as someone who is, I think love is too strong a word, but has very deep feelings for this person.
And you know what? What else is telling is like, when you want to be with somebody, you'll do anything that you can to be with them.
Yeah.
You know? And that whole line of, I'll pay you $10,000 to come home with me tonight. Hmm?
No, that's, he doesn't say that.
He doesn't?
No.
Oh.
When did he say that?
I thought he offered her money.
No. He said he's gonna write her a check.
He write her a check. That's what I meant. Yeah, all right. Yeah. Well, anyway, like if I had that power, like if I had that at my expenditure, I would completely say I would use that. You know, I know it's messed up and it's like degrading in a sense too, but. You know
but
what?
He realized right away that that was the wrong
if
thing
If I
to
had
say.
That in my power, I would have said the same thing.
Yeah.
And that's also telling of, I don't think he wants to reform her so as much as he just wants to be with her.
Yeah, I don't think he wants to reform her. I mean, I think he wants to reform her almost by accident. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's just, it's funny. I love then the nature of the way the rest of the scene goes because she realizes, because she says it by the end, how she says, like, you scared me. And you this right. me, you that me, you know, you cross the line or whatever. But he still wins her over. And you know why? Because he's so goddamn
he's
genuine.
Sexy.
Right. Look, Roblo's a good looking dude. You know? If I was of that persuasion, I'd go for a roll in the hay with him. But you know,
roll in the hay.
Roll in the hay, this man. That means have sexual
relations. The second time you've said that today, and I've never heard that in my whole life.
But yeah, have you never seen Young Frankenstein?
Yes, I love that movie.
She sings the song, roll, roll, roll in the hay. And the joke is that she's singing something. She's singing basically, let's screw.
Oh, wow.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I love that movie. We should do a podcast on that movie next. Okay. That's a great movie.
We got a lot of movies that we need to do before we do that movie.
Igor.
Frodrick. So, I think he's so genuine that he can just win her over because, you know, it's the whole thing of like, I'm just going to be your friend and this is how it's going to go. And it's a little machismo and it's a little... borderline sexist or whatever because it's like the man asserting himself and blah, 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 whatever. But it's not so overtly that it's going to bother me. And then it ends really cute. It ends with that great little moment of, you know, like, why don't you buy me a drink? And he's like, that sounded awfully professional, which I thought was really, really great. But yeah, I think his motives are deeper and maybe not as... Because I'm sorry. I was saying that you made a very good point because his dialogue is indicative of someone talking to someone who's more than a friend. Like, I had a really good day. I seem to be playing more of a role in policy issues, I think he said something. Like, those aren't things that you're going to tell someone that, you know, is even like, I don't know. It's just, it's something that's a little bit more personal. It's, you know.
I really hope they work out.
I hope so too. I mean, I don't know. We'll see how that goes, but it's...
They're so cute.
I love Lisa Edelston, who plays Lori. She's she was on Sports Night for an episode or two, and she was great on that show.
I love Sam.
I know you do. I love Toby, because Toby gives it to Sam pretty good.
Yeah, I know. You do give it to me.
All right. I don't know. Any other thoughts on Lori and Sam? Other than you want them to be together, we all know that.
No, I think that's it. I think the general public knows how I feel about them.
Yeah, they know at this point. I mean, you've made it pretty clear.
Oh, I want to talk about Sam, though. Isn't it great? I want to talk about a dynamic between Sam and Toby. Why? Sam got a cookie. Toby got nothing.
Okay.
Toby got nothing in the beginning. Okay. Sam got a cookie. He walks in, he's getting cookies. Okay. Toby got nothing.
That's fine.
All right.
I didn't want a cookie.
Well,
I mean, Toby didn't want a cookie.
Yes, you did. He asked for one. So, you know what? When you go to sleep tonight, just know I got the cookie.
Okay, that's fine.
All right.
Come into my office. Into my office.
No, because I'm going to be summoning you.
Oh, right. Go work on the Hilton head draft, would you? in case you didn't realize in this little play, I'm Toby and he's Sam. I don't know that I have anything else. I did want to say, I did like the end of the episode, the thing with...
could we talk... I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, with the end with Bartlett, I really did like how, at the very end, right before he says the line with the God's own thunder, you know, I'm going to wipe them off the face of the earth, just from a directorial standpoint of view, they hold on his face for quite a bit. They cut to John Spencer, Leo, a couple of times. But they hold on Bartlett's face quite a bit, and he does start to get emotional, and he almost looks like he's lost. And I thought that was a great way to play that end scene, to kind of tease that, because you don't know where it's going. I mean, I don't, you know, I've seen this episode now, but I don't know if you saw that coming, that he was going to say that. But I thought the way he looked, how it almost seemed like a disconnect in his eyes. He went through the motions, you know, Tel Aviv, London. And then Leo's like, yes, state is waiting for your call. You know, do this. Okay, I'm going to call the family first. And then Leo's about to walk out. And then the reveal of, I'm Rambo. Right? That's what I'm going to, Bartlett going Rambo. So that's, I just wanted to point that out, because I thought, you know, just from watching, I mean, if there are any aspiring directors out there, that's a great moment of using the camera to tell the story. Like, that's not in the none of that is dialogue. That's just the way that you're using the camera to set up an image, to look at someone who seemingly is lost and holding on it and holding on it and holding on it, and then it turns.
Yeah.
I just want to point that out. What were you gleefully... I want to talk about this.
When Sam walks into
what?
Toby's office and goes... Last night I slept with a prostitute.
Yes. Yeah.
I thought that was great.
It is great.
And, you know, I always love bringing it back to us, so.
Okay, why?
Have you ever had to walk into a superior's office or somebody's office or a conversation and you just blurted out something?
I've never, but I have made a joke that didn't quite land. And... So I was working in a restaurant, and tables are big and the room is small. So, you know, if you can, it's ridiculous, but it is the way it is. So I'm like, if you can like move the tables, you know, a little bit this way, a little bit that way, it really makes a difference. So there was this group of four, and, you know, I suggested that they move the table just a couple of inches. And I was like, guys, let's just move the table a couple inches. It'll create a lot of space. It'll create more space than you think. And they're like, yeah, no problem. And as I'm moving it, you know, I just say, I'm like, yeah. And guys, we know a couple inches make a difference, right? Dead silence. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to be back. And then I just walked away, because like I thought I was going to get a big laugh. They were younger people. I didn't think it was going to be like a thing where it's like, oh my God, he's talking about penises or whatever it is that they were right. Like, it was so, I was like, so I've said something kind of like in a blurty type way, because it was just like off the cuff that totally didn't land. That's not comparable at all to what you're asking, but that's the first thing that came to mind. Have you ever walked into a room and told someone that you slept with a call girl?
No. Surprisingly not.
Surprisingly not? What the hell does that mean?
I've done some crazy shit, Joe.
I believe you have.
No, I think on the when I'm under stress, I tend to just disclose information about myself.
So I would, that's great. Just put Anthony in like a prison. I went to bed till I was 8. What? Like nothing. I'm under stress right now. Sorry. Just like randomly, you just blurt shit out.
That's what happens. It happens all the time whenever I'm stressed.
That's so funny. Yeah. Well, to have you, can you give an example of one time that you did it? Wow, we just hit a nice little low.
Yeah,
right there.
I'm trying to think.
Dead silence. All right, well, if you can't think of anything, I'm moving on.
It always it's because it happens so frequently when I'm stressed. Right. It's almost like my lie detector. You want to get the truth out of me? Just get me stressed out. I'll just start saying stuff.
That's good to know.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Like again, I guess the good example is at the restaurant when I come in stressed, which is usually every time I come in.
Every time. He has stress face.
I do.
It's so funny to say. I mean, I think we all do, but.
And like, you know, you ask me about something or like somebody's just doing something. I'm just watching somebody do something. I'll just tell you exactly how I feel with no filter. And like sometimes I get looks from you guys like, wow, that was a little aggressive.
That was, yeah, sometimes. Nothing as aggressive as I said last night.
Oh, that was pretty bad.
All right, we can't talk about that.
You can't talk about that.
I've seen you do that.
Yeah, and like if it's like random, if it's more professional setting.
I'm going to have to try and really get you stressed out and then ask you a question that I've always wanted to know the answer to. Oh, yeah. Now I got to like creep. I have to do like a Saw thing. I'm going to like set you in a trap or something and be like, answer these questions. Do you want to play a game? This is going to be good. All right.
Yeah, that's all I got.
How's that? Was that good? Was that good? That was good. Was it good for you? It was good for me.
It was good for me.
Post hoc ergo propter doodle. That's what we're going to call from that one. We're going to have to wait and see what we think about our guesses about Bartlett for the next episode.
Right. What's the next episode called?
A proportional response.
A proportional response. Ooh, that's going to be
Doesn't that already sound good?
Yeah, after that last line.
A proportional response. Dost thou believe it to be a pro? I don't know. We're going to find out. All right. So that's
so
a wrap
excited.
On. I know. It's a wrap on episode 2, guys. Thank you very much for listening. This is Joseph Amato saying goodbye. Goodbye, Anthony.
AC out.
That's so stupid.